This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome to C-Suite Radio.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Welcome to Mitchell Levy Presents Aha Moments. Mitchell is a thought leader, entrepreneur, and TEDx speaker who helps you think big and lead an authentic life. Each week, Mitchell gives leaders the inspiration they need to make a greater impact and share their genius with the world. Now, here's Mitchell Levy.
Hold on to your seats. This is an amazing episode. It's originally from the show Grow Your 1099 with Mitchell Levy and Josh Jones, where we talk about door-to-door selling and how to actually sell effectively. And we have Ben Gay. Actually, we have Ben Gay III. And this man is a living legend. Zig Ziglar is somebody who used to work for him, as well as Earl Nightingale. Napoleon Hill was his mentor. This man has done such amazing things in his life, and to listen to the living legacy talk is absolutely spectacular. So hold on to your seats, listen to this episode. It is going to rock your world. Hi, Mitchell Levy, the AHA guy from AHA That, with another episode of Grow Your 1099 with
Josh Jones. Good morning, everybody. Actually, yeah. Afternoon.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good day to everyone. And hey, I am so excited. These are two men, obviously slightly different age groups, that I just absolutely adore. They both have set their minds on things and done so many amazing things in life. And Josh, given your propensity to continually learn, continually self-improve, you've read all of the works of each and every one of the people that Ben Gay III, Benjamin Franklin III, has written. And all his friends have written, that I thought, I'm just going to pass the ball to you and say, please go. It's your show.
First of all, Ben, I just want to say welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. My honor.
We are super pleased to have you. Mitchell, could you give us a little bit of an introduction on Ben?
I can, but I don't think I could do as good of a job as Ben can. But what I'll say a little bit, and then Ben, it's all yours, right? So here's a man who life has given him, and I'm going to give it from the perspective of those people who are our audience. Life has always given him interesting opportunities, including the name that he was given at birth. And he's taken each and every one of those opportunities and taking them to, you know, whether there have been good things or bad things, he's always been able to make lemonade out of either the lemons or out of the Rolls Royces, or in some cases, are you ready, the companies that he was given. And life has been amazing for him. So the folks that he worked with and interacted with are, you know, all of the major players that we've talked about and looked at, the Zig Ziglars, they're all Nightingale, the Napoleon Hill. As a matter of fact, I mentioned one of the books that we took one of Napoleon Hill's, and we're working on another one now. So Ben, do you want to add a little bit to that in terms of, you know, the closers and what you've been doing there and so on?
Sure. I'm just a salesperson who sort of got lucky. I saw an ad in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution one day. It said, if you know anything about marketing plans and want to make more money, dial this number. Well, I didn't know anything. I didn't know what a marketing plan was, but I need to make more money because I was putting my first wife, who's since passed away, through nursing school on $100 a week. And I used to have to adjust that for inflation. It wasn't quite as bad as it sounds today, but it was bad. And so I stepped into what turned out to be a rocket ship, cleverly disguised as a phone booth on Atlanta's Peachtree Street, dialed the number, began to interview the gentleman who answered the phone, Bill Dempsey, because I was about to bless him perhaps with my presence. And about 3 or 4 minutes into tell me who you are and what is your marketing plan. And I'm Ben Gay with Brown Gay Food Brokerage Company. Of course, I didn't mention that the Gay in Brown Gay was my father, not me, and had been my uncle before my father. So just as I was sort of warming up to interview him, Bill Dempsey said, Mr. Gay, I'm not the man standing in a phone booth answering want ads. Where are you? And I told him, and he said, good, you're 3-4 blocks from my office, 1447 West Peachtree Street, Suite 300. Be standing in front of my desk in 10 minutes or don't ever dial this number again. And he hung up. And my running buddy, from high school, worked for my father also and became my business partner. Greatest salesman I've ever personally worked with, Jimmy Rucker, pulled around his car and I jumped into it like Batman and Robin. I said, quick, 1447 piece. And he said, what's up? And I said, we're going to be rich. I figured anybody was arrogant enough to hang up on somebody after they'd run an ad to get people might have something going for them. So I went skidding into the office with a minute or two to spare, introduced myself, turned around, and they said, have a seat. Turned around and there was a curly-headed guy sitting there and I said, hi, my name is Ben Gay, what's yours? And he said, Ben Gay, and went into all the Ben Gay jokes. And when he finished, I said, what's your name? He said, Zig Ziglar. And I said, with a name like Zig Ziglar, you're making fun of Ben Gay? You got to be, because I'd never heard of him, nor had anybody else. He was a cookware salesman from Columbia, South Carolina. So that was sort of the rocket ship I stepped into. Before I left the office that day, Bill Dempsey gave me, I have it right behind me in a bookcase, an old scratched up copy record of The Strangest Secret by Earl Nightingale. And he gave me an old beat up copy of Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And he said, listen to this, read this, you're going to need it. Because I was 22, I guess, and just full of myself for no reason. I had nothing going for me at all, except a wife who'd like to have her tuition paid. So I listened to the book, read the record, got involved in the training, didn't do well in the beginning because I didn't listen to instructions. I didn't learn the script. I didn't do anything I thought personality would carry me along. And fast forward, they ran a contest. I beat them all. That was about 6 months on, 6 months to 18 months on. And I won the mystery prize. Second prize was a Rolls Royce. Third was a Lincoln Continental. First prize was a mystery prize. Well, it turned out it was presidency of the company. And I later asked the owner of the company, William Penn Patrick, why was it a mystery prize? And he said, because if I didn't like who won, I would have changed the prize. So I said, you must like me. You know, I'm in. So one day, not too long after that, a whole bunch of people would stay at our house because we had a big home near the corporate office in San Rafael, California. One night, Earl is there, Earl Nightingale, and Dr. Napoleon Hill is there. We're having dinner, and I was telling pretty much the story I just told you. And they said, well, did our stuff help? And I said, well, you're sitting in a 7,000 or whatever it was square foot home in Marin County, and you both work for me. So yeah, it your material helped a lot. Minus your book, Dr. Hill, and your record, Earl, I'm not sure we'd all be sitting here together. So that was it. I've been in selling since I had my first business when I was 14, employed in the growing season, about 20 kids in the lawn mowing business. I did the selling, the inspecting, and the collecting, and split the money with them. But we got more money under that system. So by the time we split the money, they got about what they would have gotten anyway. And I got what I would have gotten had I mowed the lawn. And I didn't like mowing lawns. I'm not a manual laborer. I found out early in my career, and on down the line. And Josh, with your direct sales door-to-door background, you'll be happy to know the first sale I remember was a box of Krispy Kreme donuts. And my father told me how to knock on the door and step back. In the South, everybody has a screen door. Step back almost out of sight, so they had to open the screen door to see who was there. Mm-hmm. Hand them the Krispy Kreme donuts. Say, it's Krispy Kreme donut time. Don't ask them. Just hand it to them. They'll take possession and collect your whatever it was. I don't know what a dozen Krispy Kreme donuts sells for now or then, but whatever it was, I still remember the thrill of when that lady went inside, got her purse, came back, and paid me. And I thought, oh, this is nice. And about 30 days later, 40 days later maybe, the delivery truck brought me my brand new bright red 26-inch Columbia bicycle I won selling donuts. That was a fundraiser. I wasn't making money, but I won a bike. And I remember thinking, I really like this. I like the transaction. And it paid off in the lawn mowing business. And then over the years, I've worked for and or trained people with Kirby and Rainbow and just about home improvement people door to door. And the other day, the neighbor right across the street had solar put in. I told Gigi, don't answer the door for the next 30 days. Yeah. She said, why? I said, because every solar person in the area will see the new system, and of course the company put it in, they were there immediately, but then the others will see the new system and knock on the door and point out that we don't yet have solar. And so sure enough, you know, on a regular basis, and then and we have a intercom system. I said, just put your card under the mat. And one guy said, there's already five here. I said, well, become the sixth one, put it down, get it under the mat. I dread it when somebody gets new roofing, new siding, solar, or whatever, because they fan out, as they should, and start rapping on the doors. So that's pretty much it. I still, oddly enough, go door-to-door from time to time. If I write a sales script for somebody, I go test it first. And sometimes down in Sacramento, but up here, people, one lady opened the door one day, and there I was standing there. The last time I was there, it was with Kirby, and the next time was with whomever, and this time happened to be with ADP, ADT, ADT, whatever it is, the fire alarm people. And she opened the door, and she said, lay it on me, because she knew I wasn't selling whatever it was. I just wanted to test the script. So I keep my finger in. And unlike a lot, I'm not knocking other sales trainers, but I grew up in the business with people who were sales trainers. And as I got to know them and they came to work for me, I discovered they hadn't sold anything in 30 or 40 years. And in some cases, they'd never sold anything. Mm. Well, I'm on my business card, it says first, salesman. And then it goes on to sales trainer, consultant, and so nice. On. I'm first and foremost a salesman. I've written several orders this morning. We'll write several more before the day's over. Some small, some big. And it's what I love. I absolutely love it. And when I see you, Josh, because you're about the age I was when I started getting some traction, I get a thrill out of it because I know what's ahead of you. Not all of it good.
Oh, no.
But I know what's ahead of you. That's a long, as usual, that's a long answer to a short question.
But what a great, episode. Thanks, everyone, for joining us.
Thank you very much. That is amazing. I could sit here and listen to this all day. This is just absolutely amazing hearing about just your life, hearing about the experiences that you've had. The thought that I had when you said that about salesmen first, I had a leader who talked about if you stop selling and you're in a leadership position, suddenly you become irrelevant.
Yep.
Where you don't actually understand the full process. You don't understand how everything works. So you can't empathize with people. You can't relate with them. You don't really understand the full process. So that's why as the CEO of the company that I work with, I'm actually out there selling side by side with all of the employees, and I'm actually leading the sales as much as I possibly can, selling as much as I possibly can. And that was one of the things that when we talked about last time, I was like, Mitchell, we need to bring a rainmaker onto the show. And he's like, oh, we can get a rainmaker. And that's why you are here. So that's actually something that I'd love to hear about is how did you get to that point? And what can people take away today? What is advice that you would give people listening right now of how they can get to that point of basically being a rainmaker, being a leader in sales?
Oh, and Ben, before you, I'd like to just add a small seasoning to that question. Because I just wrote, Josh, what you just said was so brilliant. It's when you're in a leadership position and you stop selling, whether that you're a company of one or you're the CEO of a multi-billion-dollar publicly traded company, when you stop selling, you become irrelevant. And so there are many companies who don't understand that. There are many people who don't understand that. So I just wanted you to season that in, Ben, if you can, on your answer.
Yeah, absolutely true. I can't say, you know, I've reached that age where almost everything I know is hindsight. So I can't say that I set out with that in mind. It just seemed natural to me. My father was very successful in business, but he got up every morning, put on his suit and tie, and went and sold stuff. He didn't sit in his office, but I almost can't picture my father in his office. I picture him leaving the house in the morning and coming back as the sun set, with his briefcase or his samples or what have you, and, talking about what he did that day, what he sold that day. So I just thought that's what you were supposed to do. And of course, in the very beginning, I didn't have a whole lot of choice. I didn't have a salary or anything to lean back on, so I had to keep selling. But I quickly figured out, part of it in hindsight, that if you're going to stand up in front of a group of people, and one of the reasons I lost faith in several people who trained me, they'll remain nameless, was I'm out there doing it. And when you're out there doing it and someone's talking to you about it, it's real quick that they don't know what they're talking about. I mean, you just know. We have a friend who's a doctor, and we were at a social gathering, and this blowhard idiot who was there for some reason, the husband of somebody, sat down across from Jerry, the doctor, and began to tell him his views of medicine. And I could see Jerry fighting to keep his eyes from crossing. He didn't want to be rude, but he didn't want to hear it either. And there were a lot of sales trainers and senior people who maybe had had their day. And it's not a matter of age. I don't want to hear about old-fashioned this or old-school this or whatever. I make more sales than most viewers of this show will make this week. I'll make them this day before it's over. It's not old school.
I hear a challenge, by the way. Yeah. Just saying.
Challenge accepted.
I've been number one everywhere I've ever been in selling, and I was talking to Ali Rita the other day. If you haven't heard of him, get him on your show. He broke Joe Girard's 44-year record for most cars sold in a year. He sold 1,582 cars in 2017. Oh, that's wow. About five or six a day, but is actually more than that because Ali doesn't work on weekends. He takes religious holidays off, and he spends time with his kids. And I don't mean he's a slackard, but he has a system and a procedure. So anyway, I'm fond of saying I'm number one this, number one that, and so on. And somebody, whoever was interviewing me with Ali also, Noel Walsh was interviewing me, and Ali was on the split screen. He said, So you could beat Ali if you went there. And I said, we'll never know because I'm not stupid enough to go into that dealership and go head to head with a guy who's selling 1,582 cars a year, who's been there 10 years. He's got the momentum behind him, you know, now. But it wasn't a lucky year. I'm quoting from memory, but 4 or 5 years ago, he sold 900, then he sold 1,000, then he sold 1,100. It's building. So we just presented him. I'm the executive director of the National Association of Professional Salespeople. We just gave him a great big plaque. You're the best there ever was, and a trophy, and so on. And he said, and I'll be proud to hand it to the next person, because it was a little squabble about Joe Girard not wanting to give up his 44-year title, denying that he got his butt whipped. But it took 44 years to whip it. So, you know, God bless them both. But Ali said, I will graciously present the trophy to the next guy. And I said, well, with your momentum and the fact you're not a salesman, you're a selling machine, the next person is going to be you. And probably the next person after that and so on. And maybe 40 years from now, you can take the newest trophy and present it to somebody. So there are situations and people, Josh, you may well be one in the solar industry where I probably would just as soon not go up against you head to head. But if you put Ali and me in a dealership where neither one of us had a following, and I had time to find out how you sell, I mean, you know, I know where the steering wheel is and the accelerator and the brakes, and that's about the extent of my car knowledge. Give me a little product knowledge. I'm confident I could beat him. But not in that situation with that momentum with what he's done. He has done exactly what a salesperson is supposed to do. And from what I've heard about you, Josh, you've done the same thing. I mean, making the kind of money you're making, knocking on doors, is astounding. There are people who wouldn't believe that. When Ali sold 1,582, I have it stuck here on the side of my computer so that I don't forget the number. When Ali sold 1,582 cars, instead of congratulations, congratulations, typical salespeople from all over the world said, nonsense, not possible. He didn't do it. You know, well, I've got pictures of the boxes they brought out for the audit when Joe Girard sued him. He sold 1,582 brand new cars in 12 months. Mm. So I love meeting people like that, Josh. I love meeting people like you. Looking at you to me is like looking into a time machine, except my hair wasn't that dark. I know right where you are. I know what's coming, good and bad. There'll be some ups and downs. Mitchell has been kind enough to remind me from time to time that I'm a Southerner. And so if you ask me a question that could be yes or no, I talk for 20 minutes. Let me tell you a quick one. I'm at some award banquet in San Francisco being given some award. Now I get lifetime achievement awards. Back then it was giving money to somebody or whatever. And there's this guy sitting next to me who was getting a lesser award. He wasn't Bengay. But it was, I'm sure it was a nice little award he was getting. And they're up talking at the dais about how wonderful I am and this is that. And he did this and he ran this big company. And this guy keeps eating his salad. I mean, he didn't even look up. He's eating his salad, eating his salad. I got up and talked for a few minutes, sat back down. I noticed while I was talking, he kept eating whatever was in front of him at that time. And so when I sat down with my sparkling personality, I said, I get the feeling you're not quite as impressed with me as some people in this room are. And he gave me a little half smile and he said, Ben, after you crash and burn, and if you then make a comeback, I will stand and cheer with the rest of them. Right now, this could be just beginner's luck. And I thought, whoa, that isn't what Ben Gay, the award winner, wanted to hear, but it was true. And I did crash and burn since that lunch twice. And I can't, and I wish I could find him. I don't even know his name, but I wish I could find him to say, A, you were right, and B, I came back twice.
Although I'm sure, Ben, that's not what you were thinking when
No,
you
it's
said
not
that.
What I was thinking. It's what I said. So anyway, I don't mean to attribute it to luck and look like I'm trying to be overly humble, because I'm not, but a lot of it was luck and hard work. I learned the scripts. It took a threat to be thrown out of the company by my sponsor. He asked me not to come to the meetings anymore because I didn't know the scripts. Therefore, I wasn't bringing anybody. But since I was there every night, people would raise their hand, which meant I need help. And he said, then you'll go over and help them, but you don't know that script either. So you wind off blowing off their people, and you can't help from the front of the room because you haven't learned the opportunity meeting script. So you can't do any good. Basically, what you're doing is depressing people. And so I don't want you to come back. Well, we had $5,000, today's money, $50,000 sunk into this business, and now I can't come back to meetings where you do your selling. Not acceptable. So I said to Bill Dempsey, what do I have to do? And he said, learn the scripts. When you can stand in front of my desk and give me word for word the recruiting script, the invitation script, come to the meeting, word for word the 47-minute presentation we give in front of rooms, word for word, the six closes we give to a prospect after the meeting and the film is run. It said, turn to the person who brought you here and ask how you can get started. When you can do all that, you can come back to meetings. About 10 days later, I stood in front of his desk where I just interviewed 6 months before with Zig, and I did all that. He said, fine, now go get some people. The next night or two later, I walked in with five prospects, which was five more than I had in the previous 6 months, because I used the recruiting script, which I later had Earl Nightingale record on a record so distributors didn't have to learn it. They had to hand them a record and make sure they listened to it. And then I didn't do the meeting from the front of the room. Dempsey didn't trust me yet, but I did the invitation, turned to the person who brought you here, got out my legal pad, started drawing circles, and that night, adjusted for inflation, I made $25,000. I got five out of five. I'm making $100 a week. In my real life, I made $25,000 that night, 5 years income, and at my $100 a week pace. And again, like selling the Krispy Kreme donuts, I was hooked. And I figured out if you come early, stay late, work on weekends, learn the presentation, learn the product backwards, and follow the first secret of selling. 85% of all the problems in selling go away if you sell a quality product that's or service that's competitively priced, and you spend your day talking to qualified people. If you do those three things, selling is pretty much, the game is pretty much over. And then learn your presentation so that you can do it effectively. Hal Holbrook, the guy who does Mark Twain, memorized 9.5 hours of Mark Twain material. He opens with the same story every night. He judges the audience reaction, and then that determines when he reaches back into the file to pull out the next story, which one it is. And the reaction to that one determines the next one. So he doesn't do, hi, I'm Mark Twain, blah, 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 A, B, C, D, and he's done. It's, hi, I'm Mark Twain, story, okay, you need to hear this. So I say that because I'm a fanatic about scripting. I took a company that was just getting rolling and took it to astronomical heights based on you will learn the script or you won't come around here. And we took people off milk trucks who made $360,000 the first year off the milk truck. Took a waiter in Tiburon, California, and 6 months later, he was president of our Mexican operation. So I'm just fanatical about it. And I talk about beating Zig. Zig was better than I was, and he had a good partner, Mel Lanius, who, like my good partner, Jimmy Rucker, was a killer closer, both of them were. But the night that I won, and I didn't know I'd won, I frankly didn't. I knew I was in the, probably in the top 10, but I didn't know I was in the running. It wasn't a big deal to me. But the night that, the last night of the contest, the last day of the contest, Zig in Columbia, South Carolina, held a celebratory dinner because he had won the mystery prize, which he figured was better than the Rolls Royce since they called it a mystery prize. Yeah, he's having a celebration. I made two sales presentations that night, and that's the margin by which I beat him. So I'm a big believer in come early, stay late, work on weekends, know your presentation, sell a quality product. And if you do that, you win. Jim Rohn used to talk about if you, and I may not have the numbers right, but he said, if you can close 9 out of 10 sales and I can close 7 out of 10 sales and we get into a contest, I will beat you. Because I know my ratios, and I will outwork you. And so my sevens will total up to more than your nines. That to me was a great breakthrough in thinking. Just outward, I've never been in a situation, with a possible exception of kindergartners, where I was the smartest person in the room, but nobody outworks me.
I love that. So that's it. That's the that sounds like that's the best takeaway of advice for people is get there early, work early, stay late, outwork everybody around you, but then also make sure you have a script.
Get good, yeah, get good and present your script well.
I love how you say that, that you were, you've been fanatical about scripting. And that actually, that makes me want to really focus on that with our company and just because really dial it in. I've seen some of the best organizations in my industry specifically are the ones that were fanatical about scripting. And just to be hired, before you even get hired, you come with your memorized presentation. Otherwise, get out of here. You're excellent. Not hired.
That would save a lot of companies a lot of time and trouble if they do that. Yeah. You have to learn it first to get in the door. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I'm when it comes to scripting and sales letters, I'm an idiot savant. And Mitchell loves it when I say that because I have to say it together real quick, not idiot savant. It's idiot savant. I can.
Five times fast, please.
Yeah. I can hear a presentation, and when there's the wrong word, the wrong syllable, the wrong emphasis, in the back of my ear, ding, 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 that's wrong. You know, do it this way, do it that way. And I've had remarkable results with companies with minor modifications. In fact, I never start with my script, you know, here it is, go try this. By the time I hand it to them, I've already tried it. But where my starting point always is, give me your script. Many times they don't have one. I say, fine, write one. Give me your best shot at it. That way I don't have to learn your business. I don't know anything about solar except shiny things on the roof and your electricity bill allegedly goes down. That's the beginning of my knowledge of solar. So if I did a script for you, I'd say, give me your script. If you don't have one, write one up. If you're not good at writing, record your presentation, maybe on a live call, have somebody transcribe it and send it to me. When I see it, I will get ding, ding, ding. Why'd he say that? If he just said it this way. McDonald's has a new one. It's become one of my favorites. McDonald's is a dead-end job. It's a this, it's a that, and so on, which is interesting because the CEO started flipping hamburgers at McDonald's. So apparently it's not quite that dead-end if you're good at it. But on their commercials now, McDonald's, America's best first job. Mm-hmm. Now, whoever came up with that should be in the Hall of Fame. In one sentence, it overcomes all the problems, all the objections. And, you know, yeah, you're probably not going to spend the rest of your life here saying you want fries with that. But they're on script. Have you noticed at McDonald's? They're on script.
Yes.
they don't leave it to chance. You know, is that it? That all you want? You want fries with that? You want a supersize? You want the big one? You want the, you know, just those little things. Elmer Wheeler caused an egg shortage. He's the one that said, sell the sizzle, not the steak. He caused an egg shortage in the United States by going to Woolworths had hired him. They said, we want to increase egg sales. He goes, sits at the end of a counter, I think in Chicago, and watches them work and so on. And some guy came in, I'd like a milkshake, please, and put an egg in that. He'd never heard of that before. Lady nodded. She knew what he meant. He's watching her. She mixes it up and puts an egg in it. And so he said to the lady, does that make it taste better? She said, some people won't have a milkshake without a raw egg in it today. Maybe they wouldn't even allow that. I don't know. But so Elmer Wheeler caused an egg shortage by having every lady at Woolworths, which was, gosh, you may not even know what Woolworths was. F.W. Woolworths was the largest retail chain in the world. It was also, because of its 24, 34 miles of lunch counters, the largest restaurant chain in the world. And so his deal was he put a dozen eggs or more under every counter. They had these circular counters. Every lady had a circle and about 10 people to take care of. Put the eggs under the counter. When anyone ordered a milkshake, Elmer Wheeler's entire contribution was she palmed two eggs, picked them up, and said, one egg or two? And enough people who'd never thought of having one said one. Enough people who had one, like that guy he heard, said two. One's good, two must be better. They drained the eggs from the United States for whatever time it takes for the farmers to catch back up.
Wow.
One egg or two. America's best first job. We saved the answering service business, and at that point we saved the industry because we were the industry. I started the 800 call center business. People would call in. We were having a higher attrition rate of people who had a message account than I thought we were going to have, to the point, if that continued, we weren't going to be in business. And so I sat in the control room one day with my headset on, acting like I was taking calls, but I was really listening to what was going on around me. And what was going on is salespeople calling in from the field to see if they have any messages. They're beaten down. They're depressed. They haven't made the money they want. And our people were saying to them, I never told them any different. No, you don't have any message, sir. And after about, I heard that about 10 times, I thought, whoa, that must be bad news when you're in Chicago and live in Kansas City, you know. So we changed it to, you're all clear, sir. It was good news. You know, I'm not going to have to bother you with messages. You're all clear, sir. And we went from like a 40% attrition rate to nothing. Nothing. So there's little fine ways to say something better. And if you guys aren't, and Josh, when you say that, you'll get this resistance. I don't like scripts. Script sounds canned. They said blah, 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 blah. Well, a poorly done script does sound canned. But anyone who's been in selling over 30 days is on a script. They say the same thing all the time. The difference is it a good, tested, effective script? That's the question. They're on a script. And he had an objection I couldn't overcome. After you've been in selling 30 days, you've heard every objection there is. There are only so many. So since you know all of the objections, shouldn't you have a prepared response for each of those objections? I mean, doesn't that just sort of make sense? Like a play, when they're up on stage and somebody walks, nobody just walks into the scene. Therefore, the actor doesn't go, whoa, what are you doing here? He expects the person to come in and say the following things, and so it's called scripting. Television shows, scripting. The news, while he's looking at you smiling, he's reading a teleprompter that goes right over the camera. So right over the lens. Everything that's effective is scripted. So why wouldn't you?
So it's as you were talking, what popped in my head, although not directly a script, but a multi-billion dollar increase to business, was Paul Mitchell. He added one word to a bottle. Lather, rinse, and his multi-billion dollar contribution, and repeat.
Excellent. I didn't know where that came from. I see it in selling now all the time. Do this, do this, do this, and repeat. But that's where it came from. Powerful.
Yeah.
And then, Josh, I know you guys have wonderful sales training already. I'm assuming either that you've got such a great product, you've been able to get away with it, not having it. But
Josh is spectacular and constantly reading, learning, challenging. So this show, you're actually on the show, Grow Your 1099. And we go through episodes. Some of our episodes, we just bring a book and talk about it. So it's...
Well, here's one you should bring and talk about. The Closers Part 2. The whole Closer series is great.
Oh, best-selling, most popular. And if you didn't do this, books. I'd be disappointed.
But in The Closers Part 2, The Secret of My Sales Success, the whole book is excellent, is the last chapter, Sales Infiltration. It starts on page 257. And I was able to write down the nuances and subtleties of how those of us who finally got it did it. And it's called Sales Infiltration. If your people will learn that, in addition to the wonderful stuff you're already teaching them, you'll see a marked difference. Not sort of we feel better. You'll see on the sales chart, blip, blip, blip.
I love that. I love that. We're about to start a book of the month club where we read a book once every month as a company.
All right.
And I'm going to propose that book as the book that we read.
I would appreciate it. More importantly, you would appreciate it. I used to tell people when Zig was alive, and from time to time we would find ourselves in a competitive situation after we were out of the cosmetic business and so on. They said, should we use your thing or Zig's system? I said, I care selfishly. I'd rather you use the closers. At that time, I still have two kids to get through college and one through law school, so I needed the income. But the honest answer is pick one. Zig stuff is excellent. The closers is excellent. It's the most stolen book in America, I'm told. If you work in a sales organization and you want to test the theory, leave it on your desk and go to lunch. If when you get back it's still sitting there, you're not in a sales organization. Somebody will have snatched it because they've heard about it or whatever. But if you started with the whole series is great. But if you started with Closers Part 2 and taught them nothing but sales infiltration, it's the best thing I think ever written about selling. I promise you it's the best thing I've ever written about selling. And I've written some pretty good stuff.
I love that. Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, we're absolutely going to apply that in our company. Super. And I'm excited to learn more about it. And I'll give you a follow-up with how the numbers increase after.
If I can jump on a camera with you and help in some meetings, I'd be happy to do it.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Hey, Josh. So I know it's really hard. We're already double our normal time. So, because Ben, you're intriguing and beautiful to listen to. So thanks for joining us. So let me just open it up for you, Josh. So Ben, I'm going to ask you, what question we should have asked that we didn't. So you get a chance to wrap up. But Josh, do you want to summarize what you heard today and add any more value to this show?
Oh man, I don't know if I can add more value necessarily. I'll try. I'm going to try.
of course you will.
Surprise.
just to summarize, there were so many key points that you talked about. The biggest takeaway right now is I want to get my hands on the closers too, and I want every single member of my company to get their hands on that.
I'm posting a link to it in the Facebook Facebook post, so
people can easily see it. Every single person in our organization, and then anybody who's watching this as well, buy the book, download it, focus on that chapter, sales and infiltration. Rewinding back to the beginning, the story, your history, like seeing where you started out, where you came from, say 22 year old or 25 year old?
22
starting out, and then 25, you became the president of the largest multi-level marketing company in the country at the time.
In the world at the time.
Let's say the galaxy. Okay.
What do we know?
It's fun because I hear that story and it really resonates with me because that's what the book 300K at 26 is all about. Is about achieving off the charts results at a young age, and being actually the best version of yourself as quickly as you possibly can, and always having this attitude of self-improvement, self-development, and learning from the best.
Josh, I'm gonna do something live I should never do. Ben, we haven't published that book yet. We would be honored if you wanted to write a review or write a forward for it.
I'll be happy to do that, and I'll show you how I do it off the air. We don't want to take up time, but yes, I would be honored.
Oh, thank you. That's awesome.
Thank you. That's awesome. I'm really excited.
I want to make you blush, Josh. I think I did a good job.
thank you, Mitchell. It's kind of neat hearing you saying, like, you're like, I see you right now. And I'm like, I see my past basically. And a lot of good ahead, a lot of bad ahead. And it's just, I don't know. I just see you, and I'm excited for the future. I'm excited for what the future holds. And it reminds me how much I love sales and selling, and how it, more so than a career or a job, it feels like a calling, and it feels like it's just a part of who I am. And I know that resonates with other people. And I know there are other people out there that aren't in sales, that should be in sales, that should be ultimately focused on this, because they'll absolutely change their lives, and the people who they're selling to will absolutely change their lives. So I'm excited. You've given me a lot of enthusiasm for the future, and work hard, get out there early, stay late, and have a script. That's basically the summary that I want everybody to take away.
And a quality product that's competitively priced and so on.
Yes. 85% comes from that. The rest,
problems go away. Yeah. I was doing a seminar years ago and had a lot of automobile people in the room. And you may not be old enough to remember the Yugo. It was a car from Yugoslavia. The biggest piece of garbage ever put on four wheels. It had a rear window defroster, so your hands wouldn't get cold when you pushed it. And they came to my seminar, and sitting front left, first three or four rows, I'll never forget them, because they were noticeable in that they were even more shabbily dressed than the other car salesmen in the room. I mean, it was like the head bums of the questionable people. And so one of them raised their hand, "We're having a problem selling cars." And I said, "Okay, what's your problem?" "Well, we don't know." I said, "What do you sell?" They said, "Yugos." And I busted up laughing. I said, "Is that the only dealership in your town?" "No." "So you drove past the Ford dealership, the Chevrolet dealership, the Cadillac, whatever was around at the time, you know. You drove past all that and decided to sell a car that is a joke? I'll tell you how to sell. I give you two pieces of advice. One, if you take this, you don't need the second one, but one, get a gun, get people in the closing room and threaten to kill them and their children if they don't buy. That would probably sell some Yugos. And then the second one, if you don't follow that advice, is go back from directly from this meeting to your desk with a paper cardboard box, empty out your desk, and go to a dealership that doesn't sell crap. Just try that. See what that's like. I've heard through the grapevine, I don't know for, I couldn't prove it, that the entire sales team left that seminar, went to the office, packed up, and left. Hopefully they went on to sell something else.
You're the reason I haven't heard of a Yugo.
Yeah. I'm among them. That and Yugo owners. Why would you do that to yourself? When we were in the cosmetic business, I had one request. I had genius people, ladies and all, in our advertising. What we need is this. What we need is this, and so on. Then I would turn to the chemist. I'd say, "Here's all I ask of you. Make them happy," because the ladies were the experts on cosmetics, not me. "Make them happy and make me happy so I can stand in front of the room and hold up a jar of whatever it was and say, this is the finest product available. You may not like the aroma. You may not like the color. You know, that's individual taste. But you cannot buy a finer product. This is pharma. We didn't sell anything that wasn't pharmaceutical grade ingredients." And so I said, that's all I need. Let me send me to the front of the room. I'll determine the cost. I mean, the retail based on the cost. But send me to the front of the room absolutely confident that this is as good or better than Avon, Revlon, you know, fill in the blank. No one can have a better product. And with that, we built a multi-billion dollar company. Mm.
So, Ben, we'll come back to your how do people reach out to you, Josh. Ben, I'm starting with you because it may take longer, but is there a short summary of something you'd like to add or a point of view or some question? Like if you're sitting in Josh's shoes, you could say, "Hey, Josh, look at me. You'll still have hair when you get older," or something like that. But if you're sitting in Josh's shoes, is there a question that you should be asking yourself or something you should be doing? Or I'll leave it open for you to wrap up.
Well, what I would tell Josh is what I came to figure out slowly, and that is get serious sooner. And I know you're serious. I know you're making money and so on. But I would take a hard look at what you do as the highly paid, highly skilled profession it is. I've told Mitchell in previous conversations that I can pick out a year here that was totally wasted. I have one six-year period that was almost totally wasted when I was a guest of the federal government at a gated community, although I got a lot of good done there. I wrote The Closers Part 2 while a guest of the federal government at Lompoc. So by the time I came out, it was a bestseller. But I would get serious sooner, and I mean deadly serious, because if you dig in now and get with a financial advisor, a good one, I've got some off-the-air recommendations there, get with a good financial advisor and sock it away. If you're working at my age, it'll be because you love what you're doing, not because you have to. And what I hate seeing is salesmen with that deer in the headlights look, because now they're 65 and it didn't work out, like, because they broke all the rules we've been talking about today and didn't save and invest their money properly. And now they're working because they have to work. I'm working because I love what I do. We were talking one day, the $1 billion lottery or something, the first big one a few years ago came up, and Judy said, what would we do if we won that much money? And I said, I would call P. Michael Hunt, my financial advisor for many years. I would call P. Michael Hunt and I'd say, Mike, here's your latest challenge, and I'd explain to him how much it was, hang up, and I'd go upstairs and write the next newsletter. I love what I do. If I wanted to get out of it, you and I wouldn't be talking today.
Yeah. I love Beautiful. That. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm absolutely honored. We're honored to have you on this show, and I'm sure Thank everyone
who's honor is mine.
That's beautiful. Ben, how do people reach out to you if they'd like to?
Facebook, LinkedIn, all the standard stuff. If you want to go to my website, it's bfg3.com. B is in Ben, F is in Frank, G is in Gay, the numeral 3.com. And if you want to get the books, gosh, listen up. If you want to get the books at special pricing with free shipping, they are currently featured at stores.ebay.com/Ronzoni Books, R-O-N-Z-O-N-E Books, all one word, of course. And they feature everything I have lower than you can get it at my website. Go sign up with me so we can stay in touch, but don't buy there. Buy from Ronzoni Books.
Beautiful. Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks. And Josh, how about you? How do people reach out?
Facebook, LinkedIn. I am also on LinkedIn. And then you can email me as well. It's josh@elitesolarpros.com. And Mitchell, what about you to wrap up?
Yeah, so guys, phenomenal episode. Thank you. If I'm going to summarize, I'll say one thing. I am honored to see the synergy between the two of you and both of your love and passion for what you have set out to do in your life and have accomplished, and what you've set out to do and have accomplished so far, Josh, and still have so many more years to go. So to me, this is the perfect type of setting when you could see people who love what they do and do what they love, and they play all the time making that happen. That's just perfect. For me, for those I want to reach out, just Google my name, Mitchell Levy, and connect to me on the social media platform that is relevant for you. LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, which I heard is going away. I got to verify that. Snap, Pinterest, and something else. So Instagram.
And whatever.
Yeah, if there's something I'm not on and you think I need to be there, send me a note. And hey guys, thanks for a phenomenal episode of Grow Your 1099. Everyone who's been watching, thanks for joining us. We'll see you at the next episode. Take care. Bye now.
Bye. Thank you.
This is Mitchell Levy, the Aha Guy from Aha That. Thanks for listening to this episode of Grow Your 1099, where Josh Jones and I are helping to propel the door-to-door sales industry as one that's a great occupation. To learn more about Grow Your 1099, go to http://aha.pub/growyour1099. And to learn more about creating and sharing your aha moments, go to ahathat.com/author, where you can also find a link to book strategy session.
You've been listening to C-Suite Radio. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com. This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.